I'm Neil.
I'm Louise.
And I'm Ronnie.
I'm Daisy's dad.
I'm Daisy's mum.
And I'm Daisy's grandpa.
In 2018, Daisy was diagnosed with regressive autism.
She gradually lost all of her speech and began to show some typical autistic traits.
She'd spin in circles, avoid eye contact, and make loud monotone noises.
This was a big shock, as up until this point, Daisy had been speaking in 7 or 8 word sentences.
And had memorised pretty much 20 to 30 books.
Since then, we've all been on a journey of discovery.
In this podcast, we'll talk about that journey.
And explore how autism has changed all of us.
This is the story of Daisy.
And me.
Episode 2, Honesty.
Hello and welcome to this edition of the Daisy and Me podcast. I'm here, Lou's here, and he's here.
Hello.
Yeah, and what's the theme of this podcast?
Honesty. So we spoke to, it's not like a pretense to just tell you everything we think about you. That would be good, wouldn't it?
I have a rough idea what you think of me. Yeah. It's more or less the same what I think of you, not you, Lou.
Yeah.
Him.
Yeah. We spoke to a while back, actually. I realised we've been sitting on this interview for probably about 6 months now.
Right.
A guy called Adam, who is on Twitter and quite a following. His lad Ryan is autistic, and he tweets a lot about the realities of being a carer and the realities of autism. And what's really striking about his interview is just how, well, two things. He's kind of relentless.
Yes.
And, you know, he fights for things, and he really, really, you know, and he's so driven like that, but he's just really honest about things. And actually, I think it's really important. I think one of the things you can sort of get sidetracked with is trying to put up a bit of a show and maybe just sort of pretend things aren't as bad or challenging as they are.
I think it's about being able to hold your hands up and say, actually, things are really tough at the moment, and know that that's okay. Because I think we did our last episode 3 weeks ago, and actually it was a very positive episode. There was lots of stuff that was going on that was really good around Daisy and communication. But I suppose just to show the roller coaster of a life that... living with autism is that the last 3 weeks have actually been a little bit crap.
I'll just say this out loud. We're lucky to have the two of them awake because you guys have been... when you hear the interview, listeners, it is quite stark in what he's had to do to get Ryan the help he needs. And in a way, if we'd maybe listened to that interview before we'd even, that was one of the first interviews we ever did on this, on the podcast, we might not have done another one because it was disheartening to a certain extent in how much he's had to fight.
Mm. Yeah. I think he reflects the realities. And I think, on the one hand, it can be perhaps a little bit, oh my God, this is a lot. And if anyone listening to it and is sort of at the early end of their experience with the SEN system, they might feel like they are sort of overwhelmed. But actually, when you think about what you have to turn into in terms of when you're challenging for things, when you're asking for extra help, when you're doing this, you do have to be a bit more realistic about what's on offer and what you're going to have to do to get it.
You have to become a person that you perhaps wouldn't be, in that you have to be assertive, but you also have to accept that you might be assertive and the people that you're being assertive with might not particularly like you for that.
Yeah.
And that was quite a hard one for me, because I'm someone who likes to be nice, and sometimes you have to be a little bit forceful. But I think, just sort of going back to that whole fighting thing, there's a lot of fighting that goes on as a parent. It's not just about fighting to get the help. There's fighting that you do on a daily basis. And I think for us, I guess we don't want to harp on too much about Daisy's sleep, but as most of you know, Daisy has a sleep disorder. Things have been more manageable because she's been having wake-ups that have only been a couple of hours, and we've good sleep around that. But this last week, sort of 2 weeks, I guess, it's been right back to where we were at before. Mm. And actually you find yourself fighting almost with yourself in the early hours of the morning when you're trying not to get angry, but you're so sleep deprived that you just want to cry. It's really difficult. And we know the knock-on effect it has for Daisy. So Daisy has regressed a little bit over the last couple of days with, I suppose a prime example is just sitting in her chair and weeing. Now Daisy takes herself to the toilet. So that's a real, it just shows the impact that the lack of sleep has on her as well. And it's tough because you just want to be able to help her. And you just feel, I feel a bit helpless at the moment. Yeah. It's just a bit.
And I think as well as it, regardless of how much you know Daisy, there's this thing still inherent is that, you know it's not bad behaviour, her not sleeping.
Yeah.
You know it's not that, but you've got a child in front of you and he's like, no, you must go to sleep.
Yep. Yeah.
But that's not the case. You can't do
that.
That's
the hardest bit.
It's so hard.
That is the hardest bit is, like Louise says, you're knackered and you're sort of in the third hour of being awake in the middle of the night and thinking, is this going to end? And yeah, you do. You go, no, come on, sleep now.
Yeah.
But of course, it's not Daisy's fault she's awake. She's awake because she's awake.
She's wide awake. It's
part of the disorder.
She can't get
to
sleep.
She'd rather be downstairs doing puzzles than lying in bed, you know.
Yeah.
But we know the knock-on effect of her not going back to sleep is the impact it then has on her the next day.
Yeah.
But it is really hard. And I think The trouble is that when Daisy gets frustrated, and we've talked about her behaviour, she's a really calm and loving girl. But when she gets frustrated and angry, she will hit out or pinch. And she's not doing it to hurt you, but it's in that moment of sheer frustration. And again, I suppose it comes back to communication. She can't tell us why she's awake. We probably know why. She's not tired. She's awake. She wants to be doing stuff. Why would you be laying in bed when you're wide awake? In her mind, I can see. But it's really difficult.
And of course, in amongst that as well, you've also got this idea of how much we know she's taken in.
Yeah.
So when you say to her, it's nighttime, you should be sleeping. She is taking that in, but it's not making... I don't know if sense is the right word, but it's just...
I think it's almost like a translation thing, isn't it? Yeah. It doesn't translate into, because you say it's nighttime, you should be asleep. The question I imagine that pops up in Daisy's head is why?
Yeah.
Why should I be asleep if I'm awake?
Yeah.
If I'm not tired, why should I be...
It might be when she's older that she still has sleep issues. We hear a lot from speaking to people that a lot of adults with autism have sleep issues. But when she's older, perhaps we won't need to be up with her because she'll be safer. I'm hoping that she'll have that a little bit more independence. Maybe she'll read for a while and then take herself back to bed. But at the moment, we have to be with her from a safety perspective. And it's been a hard week.
And again, it's that thing of the roller coaster.
Yeah.
You go through this great period. The last podcast was about getting a new communication tablet and everything was going well and nothing was happening like the sleep thing, and then it's back and it feels like, I would imagine it's not just one step back, it feels like a couple of steps back.
Yeah,
it does.
You forget, I think for me, the sleep deprivation, it has and always will be one of the hardest things to cope with because it affects everything. It affects your mood. It affects her mood. It affects what you do. Daisy goes to a swimming lesson on a Sunday morning, which she absolutely loves. You got there this morning and had to turn around because she just couldn't cope with it.
Yeah.
So it just has a knock-on effect to everything, and I think you have to try and stay positive in that. But also, I think just coming back to, again, the interview, that it's okay to be honest and say, actually, this is just a bit hard at the moment. And saying to her, I think I just sort of say to her, we're talking about it because we're worried about you and we want to try and help you, but it's just difficult. I don't want to sound too negative.
But I think that honesty is really important as well, because we're really lucky in that you guys will normally, and your mum and dad as well, will normally text us and say, how was your night?
Mm.
Yeah.
And actually, what you don't realise is that makes an awful lot of difference.
Because
being
asked.
We're not sort of sitting there, tired on our own. There's people thinking about how we're coping, and you guys help out, and so does Lou's mum and dad. And
you're higher. Don't do that. That's what gets worse.
Hiya, hiya. Yay. Wow.
But I just to go in there as well, but I remember really when things were really tough, and you kind of in the middle of the night said that for a thing. I said to Lou, why does everything have to be a challenge?
Yeah.
You know, and that was right at the peak of the you know, she just wasn't settling.
Yeah.
It was the longest period of, she wasn't sleeping.
Mm.
You were trying medication as well. And you just, you know, it's just that, well, why is everything just a challenge?
Yeah.
And that's that is the frustration. And actually, and going back to Adam, Ryan's dad, there's sort of a little bit of that thought in his interview, because he's been through and still going through all of the challenges that are associated with the SEN and additional needs system.
Yeah.
And actually, the question you always want to ask is, when you know so many parents of children who are autistic are having challenges with sleep, are having challenges with what they eat or with their clothes.
Yeah.
It's really infuriating that all the stuff outside of that personal business with the education system, with the benefit system, it's really frustrating really that that's so challenging as well.
Yes.
It's like there are a lot of things happening at home that are challenging enough. Everything else should be easier.
Yes.
I have to say this as well, is that the story that Adam tells is very stark and it's different from the story you tell. In a way that we've talked about this, the postcode lottery about SEN needs and getting looked after. So it shows you that people will maybe relate more to Adam's story and Ryan's story than yours, because that's their experience of dealing with educational authorities.
It is really, you know, it is completely pot luck, isn't it?
It is. I mean, we have been lucky, although we are still waiting for Daisy's placement. We still don't know whether she's got a place in the special needs school. So that's all hanging over our heads at the moment. So, but I think generally so far, touch wood, in this area, we have been lucky. We have fought a little bit for stuff, but I think we know how to do that. Again, there probably are people living in this area that haven't had the support because they haven't known how to access it. Yep. I think that's a big part of it. Yeah,
but it's important to be honest about the fact that everyone's story is completely different, and that you know, the level of challenge that each family has got is different. And you know, everyone's got a story to tell.
Yeah. Right, well, let's have a listen to Adam's interview, and then we'll have a chat at the end of it.
Just for people who may not follow you on Twitter and don't know your story, just kind of sum up what got you to where you are today and your experience with Ryan.
Okay, so I talk openly on Twitter about being a parent of an autistic child. My son's now 25. I guess it started when he was 3, maybe 4. He'd just been diagnosed autistic and has learning disabilities as well. And at that time, my relationship with Ryan's mum broke down. So we found ourselves homeless. And that's where it all started from there, really. And so I talk about everything. I talk about things, being homeless with an autistic child, finding a house with an autistic child, having no furniture, sleeping on the floor, all those sorts of things. And I also talk about what it's like and how it feels to be failed, ignored, having to pound at those doors until your knuckles are bloody, because no one wants to hear you, no one wants to listen. Basically, I sort of say what works for us and how I get those doors to open, how I get people to keep talking to me on the telephone by phoning them an awful lot of times, how I get people to respond to emails. And it's just basically all those little things that getting someone to respond to an email is incredibly difficult in our world. In a world where you're raising a child that's autistic, where you're a carer, getting someone to pick up the phone, getting someone to listen to you, getting someone to respond to an email is phenomenally hard. And when you've spent a lot of time doing that, at the end of a day caring, when you're tired, when you're on your knees and it's 11 o'clock at night or 1 a.m. in the morning, and you're still doing all that research to get the very basic requirements for your child, it can be a very lonely and isolating place. And all I do through my Twitter page is a Twitter account is to just tell people what that's like, so that when they're doing it at 11 o'clock at night, when they're doing it at 1 o'clock in the morning, they don't feel as alone as I do and as I did.
Let's just go back there, Adam. You mentioned about finding yourself homeless with Ryan and the challenges that presented. Obviously, you've been through periods of isolation in your life. Was that the worst period?
No, probably not. I mean, in a strange way, and it's going to sound really strange to people listening, in a strange way, that felt like the beginning of us. That felt like me and him against everybody. Do you know what I mean? I mean, we had nothing. We had nothing. It could only get better from there. And it was amazing. I mean, we walked from that house that night and left everything behind us, his little three-year-old hand in my big, burly hand. And it was just, it was the best feeling ever. And I know people are going to think, well, that must have been terrifying. It was. I'm a guy myself that I've got OCD, anxiety, and all the rest of it. And OCD is a terrible, terrible thing to have to go through with the intrusive thoughts and everything. But if you can channel that OCD in some way, if you can make it work for you, if you can look through all those free ads in the paper, all those, I'm pretty relentless and I have this phenomenal drive. And in 3 weeks from being homeless, me and Ryan had a house. Mm-hmm. I got the deposit myself. I went through all the free ads, got all the free furniture, sewed the free furniture on, and then got the deposit for the house in 3 weeks. I mean, and I look back and think, well, how did you do that? And I look at the time, yeah, it probably was scary. And I'm probably making it sound a little bit dreamier than it was, because it really was scary. But when I look back, I've got to look back with pride at the fact that I achieved that in 3 weeks.
I mean, that's one thing that comes across in your tweets is the relentlessness of you and the partnership you've got with Ryan. It's genuinely admirable and lovely to see. I've told you a bit about Daisy and our experience. Obviously, she's six now, but she was about two when she was diagnosed. So I know what it's like for she's non-verbal and she was speaking, lost all of her speech, and then kind of we're gradually building a way to communicate again. What was, because I feel like I know Ryan and as an adult a bit through your tweets, what was he like as a kid?
Non-verbal, didn't speak, didn't utter a word, didn't cry, never cried, wouldn't cry for a bottle, wouldn't cry for a feed, wouldn't cry if he was upset, wouldn't cry if he needed changing, none of those things. Didn't speak at all. And then when it was identified that he was autistic, he went into what they call a special school, a special nursery, and then a special school. He started using PECs, those symbols, and very slowly over time, he adapted words by copying the PEC symbols. So Ryan would, back then, he would get up about 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. And you were doing 18, 20 hours a day. And it was like a scene from a cartoon where he would just be running and running and running around all the time. I mean, even now he has this amazing energy. But yeah, he didn't speak at all back then. He probably didn't speak until he was 7 or 8. Even now, I encourage speech wherever possible. So if Ryan's got a favourite song, I'll deliberately leave a gap in that song, because one thing about Ryan is he will want it to be correct. He will want that word to be there. Same with me. So if someone misses out a word deliberately, I need that gap filling, and so does Ryan. So if you leave a gap in a favourite song or favourite character, then you will, with Ryan, he would replace those words. Because he doesn't, and that encourages speech even now. and Ryan has an Alexa, who she doesn't always understand what he's saying. So what he'll do is he'll look up the word in Google, he'll call me up to his room, and he'll tap on the word. I'll say the word to Alexa. Ryan will repeat me, not just repeat the word, but he'll repeat my tone and everything. I mean, it's phenomenal to witness just exactly how they do that. And I know there's a word for it. I think it's E. coli or something similar.
Yeah.
But to watch that in practice, when I first bought him Alexa, he didn't like it at all. So he threw it in the bin. So I knew what Ryan's favourite songs were, even back then. So I'd sit up on the top of the stairs with Alexa, and I'd deliberately in earshot so Ryan could hear me, I'd ask her for all his favourite songs. I spent a few weeks doing this. Nothing happened. And then one day, Ryan took Alexa from the top of the stairs to the bedroom, started repeating what I was saying to Alexa, and now he's never without it. It's just little things like that.
Yeah, just...
Well, I say little things, but something like that, like brushing your teeth or something like that, it can take years. Visits to the dentists, doctors, getting out the car at the doctor, getting up the stairs in the doctors, getting off the floor in the doctors, making sure that you're seen at the correct time so that the stress isn't built. Phone calls before you get to the doctor so that they're aware that you're bringing someone that can't sit and wait. So when I say it's a little thing, it really isn't. It's something that we have to put a lot of thought into. We have to, we go out into town. You've got to make sure you've got all those things in the back of the car just in case they're not available in the town. You've got to make sure that your lunch is in the car just in case something runs over so that it doesn't cause a meltdown because lunch is late. And all that thought all the time is incredibly exhausting. And you know what? It's okay to say that it's exhausting. It's okay to say, my God, I've got to put all that in and I'm tired. I need a coffee. I need a break. This is exhausting. It's okay to do that. But as a carer, you don't like to say that.
No. And I get that from, because you've tweeted about sort of incremental steps that Ryan's made at the hairdressers and at the doctors and dentists over the past few weeks. I wonder, just going back slightly, because you sort of talk about the sort of way you have to parent and the kind of, you have to prep everything in advance. You have to make calls here, there and everywhere. I think we all have, when we have kids, have this idea of what kind of a parent we're going to be. So we had to adapt. And I must admit, I found that transition quite difficult, because you don't have any maps for parenting generally. You've got even fewer if your child is autistic. How did you find that transition from sort of, you know, when Ryan was diagnosed to realizing how much work you were going to have to put in?
It's a really difficult question. And it's probably an even harder answer to hear, because I grew up myself always knowing I was different, always. And last year I made the step of seeking an autistic diagnosis for myself. So I think that when you're asking me, as someone that's potentially autistic, that knows that they're autistic themselves, it's a really difficult question to answer, because if you're asking a parent that wasn't, then they'd be saying, well, we have to do all these things and we have to do this and we have to do that. But with me, when you bear in mind with the OCD, the anxiety and everything else, by the way, those things are often diagnosed before an autism diagnosis. So when you bear it, and I've got those diagnoses, when you bear in mind those things, you've then got to say to yourself, well, I mean, I do things very differently to how my wife would do things. And I do things very differently to how I see things very differently to how she would. And very often she'll say, well, I wouldn't even have thought of doing that or thinking of that. And me and Ryan have this click. We have this. Some of that is definitely down to the fact that I'm a house dad. Some of the fact is down to the fact that I'm a sole carer for Ryan, that we were homeless together, that we've been through so much together. Those are all going to be factors. But I think that there's definitely something in the fact that I myself am, without single doubt, on the autistic spectrum, albeit yet to be confirmed. And I think when you sort of put all that into perspective, your question is a very difficult question to answer, because someone else, say someone that wasn't autistic, they'd have a different act. They'd say, well, I'd have to be thinking of this and I'd have to be thinking of that. Whereas to me, those are the things that I would be doing anyway, because that's just a me thing. And I know that sounds strange, and it's, but it just, I think of doing things, and my I mean, I was up before Ryan this morning. We talk about Ryan getting up early. I was getting up early at 8 o'clock, at 5 o'clock in the morning when I was 8 years old to do a melt round. I've been getting up early, and sometimes I'm very aware that when I talk about Ryan in those instances, sometimes I have tweeted it in the past. Sometimes I also make it clear that it's not just a Ryan thing, that it's a me thing as well. And that's really important. It's not just about Ryan. It's also about me. And sometimes I'm guilty of reflecting how I feel onto the things with Ryan, because in the early days of Twitter, I wasn't comfortable saying about my own differences, but I'm very comfortable about it now. And I'm sorry, but that's a lot of waffle.
No. It's a really interesting perspective, because actually, it almost translates, and can correct me if I'm reading the wrong answer into this, is that you both click in that way, and it almost helped you parent Ryan.
I always use the old cliche that Ryan teaches me. I always use the old cliche that if you want to learn from your autistic child, if you want to learn about your autistic child, you learn from your autistic child. And not the other way around, because in most situations, you're the parent and you're saying, this is what you do, this is how it's done. When you've got an autistic child, they're telling you how it's done, and you've got to read that. And if you don't read those signs, then you're going to clash. If your child's not going to bed at 9 o'clock at night, in another world, you'd say, this is your bedtime. It's 9 o'clock tonight, Bobby, or whatever. But when you're talking to someone that's autistic, they're still alive at 9 o'clock at night. Their brain's still firing. You've got to start questioning why at 9 o'clock at night they don't want to go to sleep. And then you've got to adapt everything around that. So you've got to listen to what they're telling you. Even if they're not speaking, you've got to listen. And that's the way you can pick up books on professionals. You can take tips from wherever you want. But you're the most important person to listen to is your child, and to me, that's all there is about it. You know what I mean? If they're not eating a food, and you're saying eat this food, you've got to say to yourself, they're putting something on their tongue that is sensory unfriendly to them, that's causing a reaction within their brain. So you've then got to say to yourself, well, I can't make them eat that food. But there's another thing that you can do. You can put, and I've done this with Ryan, I've put foods on the table that I know he will not like, that he does not eat. Salads, tomatoes, rocket. 10 years ago, Ryan did not eat those things. So we put all those on the table, and with older siblings, they would eat those, younger siblings, they would eventually eat those foods. Me and my wife would eat those foods. One day Ryan copied and would then start to eat those foods. There are foods that he will not eat because sensory, but some foods he would copy. Something happened about five, 6 years ago. We went to McDonald's and they put salad on it by mistake. And now, as you know, in any normal situation, you take that salad off because you know a meltdown's coming. The salad was hidden. Ryan didn't see the salad. Ryan ate the salad. And then I'm thinking, hang on a minute, this isn't sensory. He would have grown up or whatever. This isn't sensory that's going on. So that's when I started putting the salads on the table. I never asked him to eat them. And that's really important. We do similar with clothes. We do a clothes routine. We put the clothes on the top of the stairs. Ryan never wore clothes. You don't ask him to wear them, but he sees them. He sees other people wearing them. Over time, and we're talking years, he would start putting his clothes on. Now he gets the clothes out himself and puts on the top of the stairs. And people say to me, and this is something I'm really worried and conscious about with the tweet, because when you put a moment like that on the tweet, people think, oh, I can go and do that, and tomorrow he's going to wear clothes.
Yeah.
No, you've got to put those clothes out at 5 p.m. each night, every night. They've got to be the right clothes, the same clothes. You can't. In this world, in our world, with Ryan, you can't say, well, it's going to be 4 o'clock. I'll miss out Tuesday. I'll do a Wednesday. I'll put that spotted top out that he don't like. No, it's got to be the clothes that he wear. It's got to be at the right time. It's got to be in the same place. You've got to be that precise, because if you're talking about OCD, you can't start leaving shaded areas and missing out dots. It's got to be that precise. And I guess that's where we come back to me and me being different, and how things like that work for me. Because my wife, 5 o'clock might mean 5:15. Mm. Me, it means 5 o'clock. Yeah. The same clothes to my wife might mean, well, those clothes that he wore last year. No, they're the clothes that he wears every goddamn Monday. Those clothes, not the new clothes that you've just bought. And it's those little things that matter. And it's just, I guess that's how it works and why it works, because I'm a little different that way.
Let's talk a bit about visibility, because I think over the past few years there has been a bit more visibility of people across the sort of neurodiversity spectrum. Do you think visibility is getting better?
I think it's getting better in some ways. I think it comes back to familiarity again. People need to get used to seeing, and it's going to sound horrid, people need to get used to seeing people with disabilities. People need to start getting used to people with disabilities wanting to lead normal lives, wanting to go to the cinemas and pubs and clubs. But they're not. It's 2022, and people are not still, when you walk through the door with someone that's verbally stimming, everybody will turn around and stare. When you walk through the door and someone's got headphones on, everyone will turn around and stare. And I get that to a point, because it's different, but we need to be at a place where somebody that is autistic, that is wearing headphones, that does fiddle, is reading the goddamn news, is in a TV program. Where is that? We get sort of touches of that. We get little bits of that, the odd program on Netflix or Amazon. But why haven't we got someone presenting a TV program with a pair of headphones on? You know what I mean? To block out the noises and things like that. Mm. Why haven't we got that? I mean, it's possible. And we talk about inclusion. We talk about awareness hours and awareness months. It's not a week. It's not an hour. It's not a month. It's every single day. You don't get to, Sainsbury's have got an autism hour on between 10 and 11. Oh, right, okay, so we'll switch the autism off outside those hours, shall we? No, you wouldn't turn around and say you could only use the wheelchair facilities in this store between 10 and 11. All those outside of those hours, you're not allowed in the store. You wouldn't say that to people in wheelchairs. So why is it acceptable to say that to autistic people? It isn't.
Do you get the sense, because obviously we aren't where we need to be with acceptance and inclusion, do you get the sense the trajectory is on the right way? Is it going up in terms of inclusion?
I'd like to say so, yes, but I also think that when we talk about inclusion, the people that talk about inclusion, the people that make these hours, and I think very often they're people that aren't autistic. Because if they were autistic, in some of these instances, they would be take into account that there are autistic adults out there. So take the movies then. When they do autistic screenings, they very often to an audience under the age of 18. They're not very often done to adults. And when we look at autism hours, in supermarkets, they're very often done at a time that you can't buy alcohol. well, what about an autistic alcohol that wants to have a drink? And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. Why shouldn't they? Or they're done at times that suit the supermarket and not the autistic person. They're done either early in the morning now, and or really late. They're not done. They're predominantly done when it suits the supermarket and not the autistic person. And that's the problem with them. They've got to be, it's got to be the other way around.
Well, Adam, it's been wonderful speaking to you because, like I said at the start, I feel like I sort of know you. Obviously, I don't, but it just that sort of community on Twitter, it's just been, it's really nice following your tweets and seeing Ryan's development. I wonder just because you're brilliant at these tweets that kind of just hit a nerve or hit a moment and just kind of sum up, you know, some of the fights that we have to have as autistic parents. I wonder if, looking back on your 20 odd years with Ryan, is there a single lesson you could pass on to our listeners that they should heed?
They're not your friends. They're not your friends. These people that you're going to go up against, they're not your friends. You're going to make you're going to be that lonely and isolated. You're going to want a friend, and you're going to have to make enemies of the very people that you want to be friends. Because at the end of the day, what you're going to have to do is you're going to have to bang those doors down. You're going to have to ring those phones. You're going to have to be the biggest pain in the backside you could ever imagine. You're going to have to do that for your child. You're going to have to get out of your comfort zone. If you're not a big mouth, if you're not a loud mouth, find someone that is. They'll be your best friend. They're going to help you through those early days, and eventually you'll find you. I lost battles in the early days because I was a very quiet church mouse. You're going to have to learn to roar. You're going to have to learn to make a lot of noise. And not just once, not just twice, but you're going to have to keep doing it. And when you have a phone call with someone and they promise you something, get off that phone, write it all up in an email, what they've just promised you, and get them to respond to that email. That phone call means nothing. Get it written up in an email. Whenever anyone says no to you, make sure they write it in an email on a head of paper with a signature. Because you're going to need that. When you win your fight, you're going to need that. Do you know what I mean? And that's the way you're going to win that fight. You're going to have to make a lot of noise.
I think, I mean, you can just hear the tenacity that he has. And I mean, what an incredible dad and what an incredible experience they've had. I mean, it's just when you think about the start of his story, I can't even begin to imagine. I think what it highlights again for me is how lucky we are that we have sort of come together in our marriage to become, I guess, a team. We're a team with Daisy, and a lot of people who have children with autism, we know marriage breakups are very, very, it's very prevalent, isn't it? So I think, for one, I feel very humbled and lucky to have you and the support we have.
Yeah. Whoa.
Sorry, I did say that out loud.
Yes, you did.
I didn't mean to.
I'm sorry, I just took a note of the time there and just edit that bit out.
I'm very lucky as well.
No, but in all fairness, he's had a shocking experience. I just think that to be homeless, I can't imagine the thought of that with Daisy. Well,
there's a bit in there where Adam goes and gets furniture.
Yeah.
And then actually sells it for the next deposit.
Yeah. I mean, just... Yeah.
In the meantime, you're dealing with your child who has autism.
Yeah,
yeah. It's unbelievable.
He is a relentless character, really driven. And one of the things I quite liked about what he said, because it calls back to, remember we interviewed Max in the first series.
Yeah, Max Green.
He talks about, in the same way that Max did, learning to... grow around your child rather than learning from your child. Because I think Max said, I grew up with, his mum said, I grew up with you.
Mm, yeah.
And that's a similar message. Yeah. And actually, I think, you know, given everything that we've been talking about in this podcast, we're still doing that. It doesn't stop, does it?
No, I think it'll be a lifelong. Something that
you continually learn to adapt.
It's even the small insignificant bits that if we and me and Denise are out at the coffee shop and a child kicks off, we don't go into the this child. We are thinking, what's the issue there?
Yeah.
It might be just, you know, neurotypical. It's fine, but is there something else? Then you just go, okay, well that's, you know. Smile. Don't do anything to, because you may be thinking that those parents or that single mum or dad, they haven't slept for 3 nights because they're dealing with that. And I think one of the things, Adam, you're talking about, Adam, was that this is it becoming more known about. And I think it is, and I think more people are taking it out, but there'll be times where people forget that it's you know, it's an issue.
Yeah, I think a lot of stuff about visibility, sort of, you know, how aware are we of autism and special needs, is that is on the increase. You can tell, you can just see, you know, coverage in the news and the sorts of things you see on social media and all that. But what you want to come out of that is more inclusion, which actually is what you're talking about, is getting rid of the tuts. In
it's acceptance,
places.
Isn't it? There's a level of acceptance that actually we are all part of society, whether we are disabled, whether we have physical issues, whether we have mental issues, whether we're typical, whether we have autism. It's about acceptance that everyone has a place in society, and it's not for anyone else to judge what's right or wrong. Do you know what I mean? I think that's the bit.
So on Saturday, he ate through one piece of chocolate cake. Can you find chocolate cake?
Chocolate cake.
One ice cream cone. Can you find it?
Ice cream cone.
One pickle.
Pickle.
Good.
Swiss cheese.
Uh-huh.
Salami.
Wow.
Salami
and?
Watermelon.
Not watermelon yet, but it was a lollipop. Good job. And some...
Cherry pie
and can you find that one? It's on the plate. Yeah.
Sausage.
Good. One sausage and one
cupcake
and a slice of, what's this one? Slice of?
Watermelon.
Can I ask this question just of the two of you, because you go through this bad sleeping time as well, and you both are running on empty. Is that difficult dealing with in a normal day? Where are you walking on eggshells with each other? Do you actually go through that phase?
We don't, not massively, moments. The only times that there is a little bit of a sort of us snapping at each other is in the midst of it, in the middle of the night, and it's more just a sheer frustration. But we park that straight away, and actually we talk about it. We both say, I'm sorry if I was a bit short with you. We're just exhausted. We never ever go more than a few hours with that hanging over us. And I think that's sort of something we've always done.
We don't tend to argue, really.
We just don't argue. It's not something.
The only thing I will not have, and I won't apologise for this, is I can't abide Louise's sneeze. I cannot abide it. It should be illegal for it to be that loud.
Son, we've been doing this for a while. And Louise has been in the family for a while, and finally somebody said it out loud.
Yeah, I know. It's so loud.
Can I just say, sneezes are very, very personal, and you always say that sneezes you can change them. However, Daisy's sneeze.
Yeah. It's not loud, though.
Yeah, but it's a very distinct sneeze.
I think you can control the volume of your sneeze.
What, like yours?
His has always been like that. Yeah. It's very, very...
mindful of other people's ears.
No, mind you, his brother's got a massive nose. Yeah. And when that goes out, it's a foghorn. Yeah. So we always knew when one of them was ill. You'd either get the tight one. We're getting near to the end, and we'll do Moments of Joy in a second. I just want to kind of just wrap up on... because I'm aware people will hear Adam's story and maybe go, oh my God, or maybe go, yes. What did you two take away from it then as parents?
I think just I think, yeah, just keeping that tenacity. I think the thing for me was that actually there were a lot of similarities in the stuff that he talked about, the clothing. Yeah. So sleep was obviously something that came up, but clothing at the moment. One of the things we always said about Daisy that was great is that we could put her in anything. We could choose her clothes. She didn't care. It's completely changed now, but it's a sensory issue. So Daisy, it's very difficult to put her in clothes. We've struggled with school uniform. We're now struggling with shoes. She likes to be just in her knickers, basically, which isn't great at this time of year. But I had a conversation with you and Mum this weekend before I listened to that recording you did with Adam. And I was saying to Mum, I think what we're going to have to do is when we find a pair of shoes that she likes, we're going to have to order several pairs in bigger sizes so that when one pair is finished, she goes straight into another pair of shoes that's the same. Because it's impossible to get shoes on her at the moment. I don't know. Yeah. I just don't know how to cope with it. It's really, really tricky.
Yeah.
But it just was interesting then after those conversations, then listening to that interview, because that's the first time I'd listened to it.
I think it's a bit like all of the interviews that we've done for this is even if their story is completely different, has sort of hardships that you can't imagine.
Yeah.
There's always something you can identify with.
Yeah.
There's always something you go, I can see that.
Yeah.
And I think speaking to Adam, you do go, wow, he's had a lot to deal with.
Yeah.
But you can also get that sense of collegiateness, the fact that you feel in it together.
Because
there's always something you go, yeah, that happens to Daisy. Yeah, yeah.
I saw his Twitter feed today as well, and there was just this lovely photo of Ryan tucking into a cheeseburger and these lovely looking chips.
Yeah, yeah.
But actually, Adam had commented on how there'd been a few tuts, hadn't there? Because he was obviously stimming quite loudly. He does a lot of loud verbal stimming noises, and the more excited he gets, the louder he gets. But I looked at that photo of him, the glee on his face looking at that burger and chips, and I was like, that's just Daisy with her sausage and chips.
To be fair, Lou, I've seen your face in front of a fish supper a bit like that. Let's do our moments of joy then. Who did the first one last time? That was me. So what was your moment of joy?
My moment of joy is a bit more general because my brain's not really working, but
no change there.
Working at 50%. So when Daisy goes up and has a bath with Louise, and I sort of mill around. I'll, put some washing away or do something upstairs while that's happening. And the other night I just heard out of nowhere just this almighty guffaw coming out of Daisy's mouth. And it was hilarious. And I can't remember what you were doing, but it was just a burst of laughter that was so real.
Oh, I was doing that thing. So sometimes she likes it when if I kiss right on her ear, it's sort of almost like I don't do it too loudly because of her eardrum, but I think it tickles her ear. And then she just laughs and she puts her ear up to me again for me to do it again. So I think it was probably that.
Oh, that and I've just remembered another one when I went to pick her up from after school club. And I said, she had a good day. And the teacher went, yeah, she's been sniffing our necks. I went, okay, fair enough. It's because she changed perfume.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Really funny.
Lou, what was yours?
So actually, I'm going to try and not do this in a long-winded way, but my moment of joy I was reminded of came, it didn't happen last weekend, but it triggered a memory. So just to sort of give a bit of context, last weekend, Daisy had been asking to go to the beach using her book. So for those of you who don't know where we live, there isn't a beach nearby, but it takes probably about an hour to get there. So we thought, right, do you know what? It's always a bit of a challenge going to the seaside because she always tries to get in, especially when it's cold. So we timed it perfectly with the tide being all the way out. Stopped for lunch on the way. She was happy, sausage and chips. Got to the beach, parked up. She didn't want to go on the beach and pointing down sort of the promenade. So I realised straight away what it was. She wanted to go to the waltzers. So again, just a prime example of where communication failed, because if she'd have had waltzers in her book or had been able to type it, we would have been able to tell her that the waltzers were shut. So we got down to the waltzers. We had to show her that it was closed, but she was very distraught. But it did just remind me, because we haven't been doing the podcast, we haven't updated people on theme parks and waltzers. So Daisy is an adrenaline junkie, which I think we always suspected she would be. We took her on on the waltzes last summer with my niece Sophie and my mum and dad, and we sort of knew she'd like it. We got on. It's been a while since I've been on them, and I'd forgotten how fast they go. And about halfway through, I was thinking, oh my God, this is going to be too much for her. And I just looked over at her, just giggling. I think once she sussed out the repetitiveness of it, she was a bit unsure at first. And then that was it. Could we get her off? No. It cost us a fortune. We had to just keep going.
I think we spent about 30 quid on the waltz.
Yeah.
It was hilarious, but she just, so I think we just can't wait for the summer now so we can get her back on the waltzes.
I think the one for me, the moment of joy, is you've told me about the, and this is maybe one for generally for all parents and grandparents, is phones and iPads and things that, you know, the YouTube. There's a kids' YouTube and there's a YouTube. I only had the YouTube, not the kids one on there. And Neil said to me, he says, listen, I've downloaded the his kids' YouTube onto your phone. That's what she's been watching. I said, okay. So Daisy comes round, and she goes straight from my phone. And I go, I said, now look, this is the one, you go there. And she goes, and she looks and she walks away. And then I hear this weird sort of Peppa Pig really fast.
Yeah.
And I was like, what is that? So I go back and I have a look, and she's got adult YouTube on there. So I said, no, you come on, play the game or I'll take it off you. So I tell you, and she went, yeah, fine, okay. And then, within seconds later, this Peppa Pig speeded up again.
I don't even know how she does that. No? How does she speed it up?
I don't know.
Weird. I don't know if it's the video or
is it something she presses?
She's
I went into my mobile phone the other day and she had somehow got into Netflix, into the Daisy icon on my mobile, because I was like, why is it on the kids?
Because there's a Daisy.
We've got Daisy, Louise and Neil, and obviously on my phone, and it was open on Daisy, so she'd been into my phone.
You see what we were saying earlier on about learning things? We're learning things from Daisy. I think she just kind of looks at us like idiots.
I think completely.
Yeah, just go, all right, yeah, I'm doing that. Yeah, fine. Yeah, okay.
And in some cases, she's right.
She probably is.
Well, nice one. That's a lovely end to the podcast. Thank you very much for listening to us. If you'd like to get in touch with us, the email is
daisyandmepodcast@gmail.com, and you can tweet @daisyandmepod.
Great stuff. By the way, my hip's going well.